Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on Friday, the 20th of February, and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South African President Jacob Zuma tells his critics that he is still in charge.
Indeed, the country is on track. Work continues daily to build the country and improve the quality of life of all, especially the poor and the working class. South Africa is a success story.
And this is homophobia in Ghana.
That act is not a good act. And even when they have been caught, they need to be banished from Ghana.
Stay tuned for those stories and more on this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
All eyes were on South African President Jacob Zuma on Thursday as he delivered what analysts have described as one of his best speeches to Parliament. Zuma was responding to issues raised in his State of the Nation address that was violently disrupted last week. Despite a tough parliamentary debate in which he was described as a broken man presiding over a broken society, Zuma insisted South Africa was on the right path. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kamalo reports.
During a two-day parliamentary debate on his State of the Nation address, President Zuma was called a corrupt, broken man who has broken the South African economy and not worth to be called honourable. However, Zuma's responses on Thursday displayed that he is still unbroken and in charge.
Indeed, the country is on track. Work continues daily to build the country and improve the quality of life of all, especially the poor and the working class. South Africa is a success story.
Zuma alluded to the fact that the country was indeed facing challenges in many fronts, but said his government was determined to tackle all the weaknesses raised during the debate, including improving economic growth, creating jobs, strengthening the country's democracy, and investing in the youth. However, Zuma did not turn a blind eye to what many people have described as insults that he received from some opposition parties during the debate of his State of the Nation address. First, he praised the EFF leader Julius Malema and the leader of the IFP Mangosuthu Buthelezi for what he described as dealing with the content of his speech constructively. And then it was time for tongue lashing for those he said anger clouded their capacity to think properly.
Even if we differ, I always see no reason why we should get angry. What for? This is not war. We're not fighting. Once you're angry, the capacity to think gets affected.
And to those like the Democratic Alliance that accused his ANC-led government of betraying the aspirations and dreams of former President Nelson Mandela, he had even stronger words.
I believe in what was said many times by our leader Mandela. You know, we always keep quiet when those who imprisoned him praise him today. Not just praise him, claim him as their own. And I will deal with this matter when I answer questions next week. More strong.
President Zuma went on to explain that government stance on denying foreigners land ownership rights was not vindictive, but meant to address the colonial imbalances of the past. He also declared his resolve to fight corruption. He also boasted about the country's successes in providing quality education and in the fight against poverty and HIV and AIDS. And political analyst Abdul Wahid Patel says President Zuma's speech was a declaration that he is still in charge and in full control.
Clearly the president was sending a message that he is not going to be deterred by what came out of the opposition benches last week, that he has got an agenda that he is driving, that is informing government's program of action in changing the historical impact of South Africa's history.
Zuma is expected to come back to Parliament to respond to direct questions raised by members of Parliament from his speech.
to Zoe Kumalo to find out whether the opposition was satisfied with President Suma's speech, my colleague Assumpta Lartis called Musi Maimane, parliamentary leader of the Democratic Alliance.
And I think the president needed to play to his own internal audience, and he did that. He didn't acknowledge certainly a tangible plan around electricity. He argued the job statistics and simply failed to describe to the people of South Africa how he would deal with issues that speak to job creation. So, again, he went to government policy, which, in my view, certainly will not achieve the outcomes that South Africans need, and failed to really respond to give South Africans confidence.
What are the sticking issues here that the opposition is not happy about?
He continued the denialism that says energy is not a crisis, and instead of actually bringing South Africans into his confidence that in fact it is a crisis, and that it's a crisis that South Africans need to A, be prepared for, but B, be able to work towards. How do you cut the nuclear drill? How do you ensure that independent power producers can come on board? The president didn't answer those questions. So this is a president that, when needed to be, knew how to speak to his own caucus and failed to speak to South Africans.
I know one of the issues that the opposition was not really happy about was the new land ownership bill. How is this going to affect South Africa?
I'm glad he went and took some time to clarify the distinctions between whether this was agricultural land or whether this was foreign land. We have to discuss how it's going to help the agricultural industry in terms of its ability to attract foreign investment, its ability to be able to farm and be able to produce food for South Africans. And I think President Zuma is taking on a very populist view rather than, in fact, tangibly dealing with the challenges of energy that South Africans face.
Why do you think that President Zuma is not really responding to those problems that the people, I mean South African people, think they matter the most?
The president often understood, and he understood, that there were many legal challenges around his own bid. His main problem is that he's focused on building his own internal base, his focus is on his survival, and he uses power as a vehicle to be able to stay out of jail, as it were, and really does not speak to the core of where South Africans' issues are.
What will be the impact of this, of diverging actually from real problems?
It means that we can keep diverting South Africa's energies away. We can speak about Nkandla, we can speak about many other challenges. But in fact, while South Africa's economic issues are being left aside, and it means that for an investor confidence point of view, they are uncertain about policy and where policy is going to go.
And what does it mean for you?
No, we've got to keep making sure that the issues in Parliament are discussed and they are dealt with. And certainly that the President, even though he paid lip service today to saying he would spend a lot of time, he wants a Parliament that works, then he needs to start off by making sure the rules are applied, that he can come and answer questions. It means that we've got to hold him more accountable to the issues that South Africans are worried about.
Are you going to have another opportunity to talk to him again?
Absolutely. He has to come and answer questions. And next week or the week after that, we have to debate a motion of no confidence in the president.
Musi Maimane from the Democratic Alliance. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you live from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Germany's Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier is in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Later today, he will be visiting the east of the country, where government troops and the world's biggest UN mission have been seeking to contain an insurgency mounted by an assortment of rebel groups. Steinmeier has already held talks with President Joseph Kabila. Klaus Stecker, head of DW's Africa Service, is accompanying the minister, and I asked him what had emerged from the meeting with Kabila.
He talked with Mr. Kabila on the schedule for elections, especially presidential elections in November next year. Before that, Mr. Steinmeier met representatives of the civil society, opposition politics and church representatives as well, and they all came up with the concerns after the incidents happened earlier this month, 4 weeks, or rather in January, 4 weeks ago, when more than 40 people were killed in violent uprisings against a planned change of the election law. And many saw it as an intended by the incumbent president Kabila to extend his reign. And Mr. Steinmeier clearly committed himself to the published election schedule with 7 elections from local to presidential elections in November. And he said, we commit ourselves to that process and we hope it will be a free and fair process with the same recognition for everyone, with participation from all sides. And that was clearly his message to Mr. Kabila. Besides some positive economic perspectives he also talked about.
He's also going to be visiting the east of the DRC, the UN mission in Goma. What's the reason for his visit there?
Of course, in the east of the Congo, we have the MONUSCO mission led by Mr. Martin Kobler, the German head of the UN mission. And he wants to see in Goma the progress is made there in the fight against the M23 rebels and the still outstanding offensive against the Hutu-led FDLR movement. It's still pretty unclear how this is going to happen, as there were some violations of human rights issued under the command of 2 officers. And as the UN troops are committed to human rights issues, Mr. Kobler insisted he can't work with these 2 generals, so it led to a standstill in the cooperation between the Congolese army and the MONUSCO troops. By the way, it is the world's strongest UN contingent here with 20,000 troops. And so there is a little bit of a deadlock in the fight against the FDLR. The rather positive note is that the reopening of the runway in Goma is happening later today, and it was sponsored largely by Germany.
Klaus Stecker, who is with the German Foreign Minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, in the DRC.
Human rights.
In Human Rights This Week, we go to Ghana. Human rights activists there are alarmed by an increase in attacks against people who are perceived to be gay. Faced with physical violence, some are forced to abandon their homes and families in fear of their lives. Over the past week, 3 people have been killed. Isaac Kelechi reports.
Blood drips profusely from the face of Kinto, a young Ghanaian entertainment publicist, as he pleads with a mob beating him up mercilessly. The incident, which took place in New Town, a suburb of Accra, is because Kinto is suspected of being gay by residents in the community. No amount of explanation gets him pardoned, and is only later rescued by police. After investigations, police say Kinto is not even gay. He had been framed up.
It is a complete cooked-up story. He had a friend called Salim, this victim. They used to visit each other. They became friends through the social media, so we got close. So he came to visit him as he does. From nowhere, 4 people sat at the back seat. That's all, alleging that he was sodomizing the other guy. Meanwhile, they were both sitting in front. And this Salim did never complain that he had been sodomized. And before I could say Jack, they beat him up mercilessly.
In the Volta region of Ghana, 2 students were also beaten up after they were suspected to be gays. School authorities rescued them, and when they refused to release them for further abuse, students rioted, leading to the closure of the school. Police attempt to control the irate youth led to the death of a student hit by a stray bullet. These recent cases of homophobic attacks on suspected gays are just a few of those reported in the media. The trend has become a cause for concern for many human rights activists. Robert Akoto Amuafo is executive director of the Human Rights Advocacy Center.
It's very unfortunate. It's very sad that our society would have to start behaving this way towards people they suspect to be gays. Whoever the person is, whatever wrong the person has done, the person needs to be sent to the police as prescribed by the law. If you think that the person is gay and you believe the person is gay, you need to have proof.
But my interaction with some residents of one of the communities known for homophobic attacks, Accra New Town, shows that many people remain intolerant to sexual minorities such as gays.
That act it's not a good act. And even when they have been caught, they need to be banished from Ghana. You have to sack them, because why will you have sex with your co-friend, a male, then you pretending to be a female? How are you going to feel?
It is not a good life to live, to be a gay or something.
They should beat them.
Though gay marriages are illegal in Ghana, the country's laws do not also condone any form of mob justice. Robert, like other human rights activists, fears such unprovoked attacks could breed animosity in certain suburbs where homosexuals are rumored to reside. His group is launching a campaign to help victims of abuses because of their sexuality.
We're hoping to hold a press conference very soon to encourage the public to divert from using violence against people, and also encourage the police to beef up their actions, because it is very, very dangerous if we don't have our police system working properly. If anybody falls victim, if you fall a victim, call on us. We are Human Rights Advocacy Center. We'll help you go through the process and deal with anybody who infringes on your rights accordingly.
Even with such determination, what is clear is that gay rights activists like Robert have a lot to do to change the mindset of Ghanaians when it comes to homosexuality.
Isaac Kelechi reporting. Most university students from African countries who go to Europe or the United States to study end up wanting to work there as well. And over the last few years, there has been an increase in the number of students from sub-Saharan Africa coming to Germany. But getting a job in Germany can either be difficult or relatively straightforward, depending on the subject you studied. Eunice Wanjuru has more.
Ibukun comes from Nigeria. After completing her master's degree in human resource management at a university in the southeast of England, she moved to the German city of Bonn to join her husband, who had gotten a job as a researcher in a German institute.
When I first got here, I was really looking for English-speaking jobs. So in the UN, in Deutsche Post, or DHL actually, and other companies that speak English, where I could use my English because I didn't speak German when I got here.
Bonn, the former capital city of Germany, is very international and hosts a number of companies that use English as a working language. But there are few vacancies and priority is given to applicants who also speak German. Germany has opened its doors for foreign experts and qualified professionals to work in the country. This, however, is mostly limited to doctors, engineers, scientists and IT specialists. Ibukun came to Germany a year ago and has been looking for a job ever since.
I think probably I would say that I send about maybe 5 applications every week. And then I started looking for other, like, maybe part-time jobs or jobs that I could maybe just use a basic knowledge of German to work. Another limitation is that there are not that many English-speaking jobs available for me to apply to, at least in my area.
To increase her chances of getting a job, Ibukun has enrolled in a German class, which she attends from Monday to Friday.
In the course of my looking for a job, I also went to the Agentur für Arbeit to see if they could help in any way, which is the German job center. And yeah, I think that was also what motivated me to learn German, because that's what the lady said to me.
According to statistics provided by the Bundesagentur für Arbeit, that's Germany's job center, the number of unemployed graduates of African descent increased by about 2,000 to nearly 12,000 from June 2013 to June 2014. The job center does not only help people find a job, it also offers advisory services and training workshops. Maria Theresia Janssen is part of the team in charge of the training workshops in Bonn.
Insgesamt kann jeder kommen zur Beratung.
Anyone can come for advice. If you go to our website, you'll see there is an advisory service for graduates. There are offices in about 27 locations in Germany.
An ungefähr 27 Standorten in Deutschland.
Now let's meet David. He's a doctor at a hospital in a small town 50 kilometers away from Bonn. David is Kenyan and came to Germany to study medicine at the University of Bonn. He had no trouble finding a job.
Because of my studies, I also had to do a one-year internship in a hospital, which I ended up doing where I'm working right now. So in actual sense, I didn't have really to look out for a job or to go through so many applications.
There is a shortage of doctors in Germany, especially in rural areas, where some hospitals now offer scholarships to students who are thereafter committed to working for them. So, the opportunities for getting a job in Germany are there. But the area of study does play a big role, and there's no escaping the German language.
Eunice Wanjuru reporting.
Your say.
And it's time now to hear what you, the listener, have to say about the stories we've been reporting on here on Africa Link. Abubakar Jallo and Inga Muller have been sifting through your comments.
Could Boko Haram be terminated within 6 weeks? That's a rhetoric question from Aliyu Al-Kassim in Yobe State, northeastern Nigeria, in response to a report we aired this week about the delay of elections in Nigeria.
We've been reporting that Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, has postponed the general elections scheduled for February 14th. The reason given was the terrorist threat. Analysts doubt whether the Nigerian military can dislodge Boko Haram in 6 weeks, but Nigeria's National Security Advisor Sambu Dazuki has announced that all known Boko Haram camps will be taken out by the time of the rescheduled vote.
And Aliyu came out very strong on that. He said, "My opinion is that the postponement of elections in Nigeria was indeed a manipulation of the constitution in favor of the ruling party PDP. That means security agencies have logically taken over INEC's mandate." And by the way, I wanted to end up with a question. How could Boko Haram be terminated within just 6 weeks, compared to the 6 wasted years? Does that mean Boko Haram was set up by Nigeria's federation? Help me find out, DW. This egg needs to be hatched.
I also have another short opinion piece here from Charles Angola, president of our listeners' club in Uganda.
Let's hear it.
Charles' opinion reads, "Zimbabwe isn't going further than where Tryant Mugabe is. The country can only breathe freedom after their dictator has had his mortal fill and returned to inorganic mass. And I'm afraid another parallel is shaping up in my own country, Uganda. Yoweri Museveni is darting around the country purporting development, but in a sense it is political bribery."
Now, just so you know, these are comments and opinions from our followers and online readers. We at Deutsche Welle edit this comment and make sure they conform to our editorial standards before we air them.
Thanks. Anything else?
Yes, I do have some good news here. We are starting a new quiz competition, but this time around, it will be a bit different from the previous ones.
I'm sure many people will be excited to hear this. So how does it work?
You know how every Wednesday we have opinion questions here and we ask people for their opinion and we read them out on Friday.
Right.
Okay. Now, we will compare all these responses to our opinion questions and make editorial decisions. The individual with the best response will receive from us either a t-shirt, a hat, a backpack, necktie, USB, stick, umbrella, iPod, or even a radio. All of these items have DW's new logo on them. The first and second runners-up will receive stationary items, writing pads and pens, all with DW insignia.
That's good news indeed, and do not forget to include your full name, telephone numbers and home address to receive your gifts.
Looking forward to hear from you. That's all from me.
And from me as well.
Abubakar Jallo and Inga Muller.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.de/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations, send us your feedback in a text message, and sign up for our newsletter, dw.de/AfricaLink.
Our main stories before we leave you. South African President Jacob Zuma has been replying to his critics after his State of the Nation address was violently disrupted last week. In the DRC, visiting German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier has been holding talks with President Kabila, and human rights activists in Ghana say they are alarmed by an increase in violent attacks on people perceived as gay. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. My colleague Isaac Mugabe will be here on Monday. Do try and join him. If you'd like to comment on our programme, then please send a text message to country code 49 160 957 59510, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Thank you for listening. Have a pleasant weekend. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.